Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to changing the world of work so that more organizations can be more effective and less dysfunctional, and employees can be more fulfilled and less miserable. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host, joined by Cody Thompson, my trusty co-host. How are you today, Cody?
Wonderful. Doing wonderful. Great.
You used that last time. Boy,
oh, we're just
always in a rut. Yeah.
On my sheet, one of the options for me is badass. Can I go with badass?
We're going to officially change wonderful to badass.
Okay, deal.
And Tracy just went home sick. She's not feeling well. I think it's bad sinuses. We're having some bad allergies out here. We've got Matt on the boards doing our engineering, also with allergies. It's that season. And Cody, what is our topic today?
Enough about productivity.
That's right. Enough about productivity. What I mean by that is people talk about this all the time. But productivity is one of those words that people use without really understanding what they mean by it. And that often leaves their employees and others around them confused and frustrated. And today we're going to talk about why that is. And we're going to try to explore what we think is the best kind of productivity of all. You know, Cody, recently I saw on the news that productivity in America is way down. And of course, what they mean by that is the amount of output in our economy versus the number of hours that people work is down. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not at all surprised by that, because I think with so many people still working at home, the truth is, I really don't believe that most people get everything out of the workday when they're working from home. I think it's a really hard thing to do. Does that make sense to you?
It does. And I'm also not just saying that as an indictment of other people. I work from home, and and I still feel like I get a lot done, but the amount of bouncing ideas off of people and refining them and moving the ball forward more quickly when I was in the office, it's almost impossible to replicate at home. So it's not like people are lazy and they're at home now. It's like, this is just not the environment where it increases productivity naturally.
Absolutely. And that doesn't mean that some people aren't better than others at home and that those aren't good distractions, but there's a lot of switching costs when you're at home. And So this idea that we're going to take a big portion of our economy and shift it to working from home and not experience a decrease. Now, I think the reason why people are so surprised is because people probably still report having worked the same number of hours, but the output is going to be down. But we don't want to talk about this from a macroeconomic statistical standpoint. We want to talk about productivity and the way people do. And that is that productivity is seen as how much work you get done in given a certain amount of energy or time you put into it. And I think that the hard part about this is we see it as a science, Cody, as something that can be easily measured statistically, and that we can somehow manage the actual ratio or the numbers from the outside. And I just think that's missing the boat. The idea is that somehow productivity is a silver bullet where people are going to get more for less, and they think it's about efficiency and how we use carrots and sticks to motivate people. I just don't think that's the right way to look at it.
Well, I think it's actually kind of interesting. Even when you say, hey, I read in the news or saw in the news that productivity is down. Now, maybe I'm too simplistic, but I don't even understand how you would measure that. If we all worked at factories that we were all making little widgets, we could go, oh, we had this many man hours in the factory and this many widgets were made. But it feels like that was how we used to measure it. And we're still trying to figure out what we're doing now and apply that old way of measurement.
I agree. I'm glad you said that, because I don't even trust the data. I think They just take GDP, divide it by the number of people who report to be working, multiply by 8 hours a day, and come up with a number.
Right.
I think it's almost useless. But let's try to apply it now within a given company. Yeah, and if we're a factory that makes widgets, then that's one thing, but there's very few of those around. And yet we still talk about productivity. And I think what happens is when we're talking about it, people are thinking about, like, are these people busy? Mm-hmm. And are they efficient? And are they using their time well? And that, to me, is really hard to assess just by looking. I will tell you, in my office, we've had many visitors come in, and they will say, in fact, Matt's roommate, Steve, came in the other day. And I had to say to him, hey, we actually do work around here, but I know we're talking to you and we're having fun, but a lot of the fun we have is in and around our work, because people will come in and say, what are you guys doing? And anybody who was evaluating us based on the sheer observation of how it seems we spend our time, would probably question our productivity.
Right. The opposite is true in other organizations. And I think you might have talked about this before I hopped on, but I have a family member, a sister-in-law, who worked at an organization. She was a remote employee that actually recorded the amount of movement on her mouse and laptop and keystrokes per minute. And in order to basically suggest we want to make sure that you're working all day, busy all day. And then just a week ago, I saw this hilarious thing online somewhere where someone had taken their mouse and attached it to a Roomba that was just pushing it around the room, just to make sure they were clocking hours, you know? But I totally agree with you. I mean, if you walk into, it's almost as if they expect, if you walk into a room and everyone's heads are in laptops, then that means that it's a super productive work environment. Whereas when someone walks into our office and there's conversations and we take some time to, you know, greet Matt's roommate, that somehow it's less productive.
Yeah. You know, I think you make a great point, and that is that individual levels of focus sitting at a desk is not always, in fact, it's often not a good sign of productivity. But I think that to the naked eye, and for years and years, people have seen a factory where everybody's working at their stuff and not being distracted and thought, wow, output is great.
Right.
But I actually think there's so much more of a dynamic between people that goes into productivity. And it's really tough to spot that with the naked eye or to measure that.
Please forgive this audible analogy that I'm going to use, but when someone coughs and they call it a productive cough versus a non-productive cough, I think that might be a better measure of productivity, in the sense that the goal is moving the ball forward, moving the most significant things forward,
phlegm out of your chest.
Thank you for even making it more graphic. I was trying to get away with it a little bit, but the idea that that's the same actual movement of your body to cough, but in one way it actually is helping, and in another way the same amount of physical exertion is doing nothing. That is actually really applicable in a workplace. It's like keystrokes and mouse strokes and meetings, that you could have as many of them as you want and be extremely busy and not productive at all.
Exactly. I actually love that analogy, because it's both, in fact, the unproductive cough takes more energy and hurts. So when people are busy doing the wrong thing, it's actually worse. And if we're measuring inputs, like how hard are they working, how much energy, how difficult is this, that's not a good indicator of whether they're producing something. And I think this goes way back. Let's be liberal artsy about this today, Cody. It goes way back. I don't know if it was what the guy's name was. Darn it, I should have looked this up. Frederick something. Not Frederick Douglass, but Frederick something. And he did some of the earliest work on organizational analysis. And he talked about theory X and theory Y. One theory is that employees are not going to do very well unless they're made to do well. They need to be watched, observed, and forced to do things. Mm-hmm. The other one said human beings generally want to be productive, and you should trust that and lean into that. And whether you're a theory X or a theory Y person really does indicate how you're going to go about trying to make your workforce more productive. Because if you're of the mindset that people are going to try to get away with as much as they can, then you're going to need to put micro incentives, and you're going to have to do all these things because you're assuming that they want to do less.
Mm-hmm.
But if you assume that most people want to find dignity in their work by accomplishing things, then you'll have a completely different approach to productivity. And I remember one of those old studies that this guy did. Somebody will send us a note and tell us who this guy was. But they would go into a factory. And again, very few of us work in a factory this way. But they just put bigger light bulbs, stronger light bulbs in. So the lighting went up. And they said it improved productivity. And then there was another one where they just had people walk around with clipboards observing people. And their productivity went through the roof. But in both of those cases, I guess it was very short-lived. Mm-hmm. In other words, that day it went up, but then it settled right back down to where it was before. And that's because we're assuming that people need to be watched more, they need to be more exposed if they're going to work hard. And I think that's the problem with productivity. I actually think, Cody, that there's two massive drivers of productivity, and that is motivation and clarity. And if you can give your people, if you can find people that are motivated intrinsically, to do something and make a connection and then clarify what success looks like, then I think you've solved 90% of your productivity issues.
Yeah, and you kind of set them free to be productive on their own, on a team, move the ball, move the needle on whatever they're working on versus set up, you know, barriers for them and parameters for them around busyness to make sure that they get there. We might have even mentioned the theory X, theory Y thing on a podcast in the past, but I've thought about that a lot. You told me that years ago. And I think that's probably there's some truth to both of that. There's some people out there maybe that are intrinsically more inclined to be like a theory X person. So maybe there's some nuances, but generally speaking, I do think there's more people that if you did what you just said, align their motivation and clarified, that they are more inclined to want to make an impact. We're wired to want to actually do something that has impact, that moves the ball forward. And I totally think in work environments where you're set free to do that, it's not just that productivity goes up, morale goes up.
Right. Well, they go together. And yet people are like, but I don't know how to adjust the morale lever. So yeah. Instead, let's turn the lights up or get people to get more managers on the factory floor. Matthew, our trusty engineer, says that it's called the Hawthorne effect when someone improves their behavior because they know they're being evaluated. It's the what we found is that doesn't, over the time they've said, that doesn't really last. Mm-hmm. But what does last is if people are intrinsically motivated by doing something and they have the freedom to do what they need to get done, that's the best kind of productivity. I like to say, like, imagine if you went to a football team's practice. And many people would say, well, a productive practice would mean the coaches have them in lines and they're doing drills the whole time and they're telling them exactly what to do. And if you went to a practice and there were like clumps of players around the field doing stuff on their own and it didn't look very neat and tidy, you might say, this is an unproductive practice. But if you knew that those players were some of the most motivated players in the league, that this team had drafted for players like that, and they told them, this is what success is going to look like, and that all of those clumps of players are working on the very things together that they need to get better at, that could be the most productive practice ever, but to the naked eye, it would not look that way.
Yeah. And I think there's something, as you're talking, there's something about the phrase we use very often in the office, which is, don't make the perfect the enemy of the good.
Yeah.
And there's some overlap in this because there is this tendency, if you have to have everything perfect in terms of being productive, that it actually demotivates people to do that. You know, you and I were at dinner. I was in California, was it yesterday, I guess, where we were at dinner 2 nights ago. And you said something to me that was like really meaningful and motivational to me in the context of what we're talking about is, I was sort of apologizing. I was saying like, oh, sometimes my personality, I can overdo it. And I realize that there's like 15% of me that causes problems with the way that I act. And it was because Bo was telling a story about how I was walking through the airport and not obeying the rules. And you said, hey, you know what? Before you leave, and you said this in front of not just to me, but to our whole team there, you said, hey, I don't want you to change that. It's the very thing that makes you good at what you do, that 85% of that will take, even if 15% of the time it might be a somewhat detrimental. We don't want you to mitigate that. That's very much why you are productive in what your job is. And so I feel like there's that's an overlap for me with this, like, it's not perfect. You're never going to do it exactly right, but we know how to move the ball forward. And you gave me permission to do that. It was super motivating.
You know, I didn't know you were going to say that. I was like, what did I say? I'm so glad that hit you that way because I meant it. You know, I think that it gets back to something we've talked about in the past about effectiveness versus efficiency. Mm-hmm. And so you have an effective team where people are motivated and they're doing stuff, but they're not perfect. They're never going to be perfect. And you think, how can we get another 3% out of these people? Well, if you take an approach to that, that might be the most costly 3% because it might actually, be at the detriment of 20% that comes natural. And that's how human beings interact. And I think people should probably stop talking as much about productivity and talk more about effectiveness and motivation and clarity. Do they know what's expected of them generally to be successful? Are they the kind of people that really want to succeed? And there are people that that aren't. And yep. those people you need to not have in your organization. And then turn them loose and don't overmanage them. And I think you've got your recipe.
Yep. And I think when you do that, it attracts other people who, because like I said, it is innate. Like when you move the needle on something, when you actually know that the efforts, the input that you're putting in is having an effect on the other side, that it actually is intrinsically motivating. So when you have people in your organization, you've created a culture where that can happen. When they talk to other people, they're like, what do you love about your job? I love that I have full permission to be productive, the real type of productive, the effective type of productive. And it actually attracts other people that go, wow, that sounds way better than this, making sure that my keystrokes are at the right rate per minute, you know?
Yeah, you know, you just reminded me of something. It's like, let's say I walked out of my office here. Now, nobody thinks I'm a productivity hound because that's not my way. I'm all about effectiveness, not efficiency. But what's the time frame in which I should be evaluating somebody's productivity? If I walked out of my office and saw two people talking about something that had nothing to do with work or laughing and said, hey, that's not productive. Well, how the hell do I know what they're talking about and what else they've been doing? And so to micro evaluate productivity, probably every couple weeks, I should look at and say, hey, are we getting stuff done that we said we'd get done? That's awesome. But to try to analyze that in a daily or hourly or even every 2 or 3 days would probably be to miss the boat and to risk frustrating people.
Totally. You know what? When we were all in the office, you used to walk around occasionally and say, I wish there was a screen behind everyone that showed what they were working on. And what I love about that is that might sound like, because you want to audit what people are working on. But actually what you wanted to do is go, I want to see what people are working on because I think we should stand up from our desks and talk about it, or I'll be super interested in something that they're working on, but I don't know what it is. And we can actually move the ball even further. It's not an auditing process. It's actually when we share our work, it can become more productive.
Yeah, I remember it was because I thought that would give people more permission to interrupt one another.
Yeah.
They'd be like, oh, you're working on that. Oh, I have some thoughts about that. Whereas what we used to do is when people were working at their desk, we would think, oh, they're busy. I shouldn't bother them. But we didn't even know what they were busy on. It wasn't because, frankly, and if they were online shopping, it would be like, oh, don't buy that brand. I got this other brand over here. I wanted there to be more interaction, not more supervision, if you will.
Yep.
So I think that's the point of this. Now, the last thing I will say and remind people about something else we've talked about, and that is, people might be thinking, but how do I find people who are intrinsically motivated or naturally motivated? Well, and when we talk about humble, hungry, and smart, this will get to hungry. And remember, there's three ways a person might be hungry. One is they just might have one of those hungry personalities where they just always work hard. I know mm-hmm. some people that just like you could put them anywhere and they just want to work hard. They're just that way. Tracy would fall into that category here at our company. Not me or you, Cody.
Nope.
Especially not me. Second might be they're just super fired up about whatever they're working on. So they're connected to the mission. That's the best, most intrinsic. Like, I love what I do and I see the impact. Third is, hey, I work with a bunch of other people and I don't want to let them down and I need to be a good team member. Any three of those will work. Mm-hmm. But if none of those are present, then by all means, feel really good about lovingly finding that person another place to work in the world. Because if they're not motivated by the work they're doing, or they're not intrinsic, they're naturally hardworking, or if they're not motivated by being a good team player, you are going to actually repel the hardest workers on your team. And productivity is going to go down, not because you didn't turn the lights on high enough or because you don't have a clipboard, but because you're actually tolerating performance that really frustrates hard workers.
Mm.
So I think that's one of the first things to do. Then turn them loose.
That's a great note to end on, Pat. I was going to say, I thought we were going to end on my productive cough note, but I think you might have just outdone it. And that's the idea that people are motivated by those three things. And if they're not, then it's hard to find people who are going to be productive in that environment.
Well, I like to think we brought it all together by starting with allergies and then ending with phlegm. So that's what we're really here to talk about today. Productive coughs and allergies.
And hopefully right. Tracy will let us post this, even though she wasn't here.
She's never going to go. Next time she's sick, she's going to go, no more podcasts when I'm out. Alrighty. Hey, Matt, thanks for giving us a little information on the back end there. And thanks, Cody, for joining us. Everybody, we love that you're listening. We appreciate it. Oh, we want to tell you something too, that the podcast is actually, we looked it up today because we never do this, in the top 20 management podcasts, this one's number 11 in like Chartables or whatever else it is. And The Working Genius Podcast is number 18. So we have two in the top 20. That's exciting. And that's because of you all. We also have 3.5 million downloads now. So please share this with any friends you have. Let them know. And if you haven't already subscribed, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. And we just love having people that are followers and that give us feedback. And to know that you're listening out there is an honor to us. So that's it for today. We appreciate your time. We'll talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.